All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are live. Welcome, everybody. Episode 24 of Logos Academy. This is actually going to be the last show of the week. We don't have anything scheduled for this weekend, so we're just going to be doing a nice, well, I don't know how relaxing it'll be, maybe a thought-stimulating show. We're going to be reading a speech from Adolf Hitler. We're going to try to analyze this. I don't think we're gonna get through the whole speech because it's a rather long speech, but we will try to get as far as we can in that speech. So bear with us on it. It's gonna be a long one. If we don't finish the speech today, we will finish it in the next show that we do. But it's an important speech. It's just extremely long. So we'll start up around the 4:15 mark, something like that. We'll let some people fill into the chat rooms first. I see we got RM26XX with a $20 super chat to the Stu Peters Network. Thank you, brother, for supporting the network. I appreciate that. Let me see. Let me make sure this is the right one. Yep. Okay. All right. We'll let some people fill in, and then we'll get this speech going. Hope everybody in the chat had a good Thanksgiving. I hope you spent some quality time with family, had a good meal. I certainly did. I ate probably way too much. Well, I gotta move this chat room over here. Jay Sparks, welcome. It's nice to see you live. Thanks for catching it. We're still getting a little bit set up here. I got a lot going on. Let's do it like that. Okay, that'll work. All right. As a friendly reminder, we are live on several platforms. We're live on Odyssey, as usual. We are live on Rumble and Rumble Studio. We're live on FTJ, and we are live on Twitter, on both my own Twitter and the Stu Peters Network Twitter. Happy Friday. I hope everyone's having a nice wind down to the end of the week. Austin, welcome. It's nice to see you. It's okay. People spell my name wrong all the time, actually. It happens quite frequently. I'm pretty surprised by that. I didn't know there was that many people that spelled Zach with a K. I wasn't aware that that was a common thing. What is FTJ? FTJ is a newer platform. It's called FTJmedia.com. Stands for Freedom, Truth, Justice. I think you can guess what else it might also stand for. They're pretty fresh, so the platform's trying to grow at the moment. It's owned by our guys, people that are against the Jewish power structure. So we don't have to worry about getting banned or censored over there. There's also a it's a good platform for processor fees. One of the biggest problems we have right now is all of these websites, the processor fees are just egregious. So if you do a super chat, typically, you're paying 80% or 20%, something like that. Like you only get 80% of what the person actually super chats. FTJ only takes 3%, so it's the best platform right now for supporting creators, and we don't have to worry about getting banned and losing our platform and having to rebuild ourselves. So that's also equally important. Is it on the App Store? No, it is. It's not. It's literally just a website. It's just ftjmedia.com. Joey says, question, have you guys had much pushback from the uneducated Christian right concerning the Adolf Hitler references? Not too much on my end. I know some people have had a hard time with it. As long as you know what you're talking about when it comes to Hitler, because obviously it's a topic that's been heavily subverted, so you have to know a lot about this in order to proselytize it, right? Or try to venerate the most demonized man in the world, which there's obvious reasons that they are demonizing him or have been collectively for decades upon decades. So as long as you know your stuff, I haven't really received too much pushback. You'll get your average random person who will just kind of like chop in here and there and, oh, you're anti-Semitic or something like that. But for the most part, no, it's really not. I don't get a lot of pushback on that view, no. Really, Austin, yeah, it's an unrelated website, but that's very interesting. Got about 5 minutes here, and then we'll kick into the topic for today. I will link the speech to, well, actually, I can't link the direct one, right? Yeah, I can't. All right, so I won't link the speech, but I'll reference which speech we're going to be reading, so you guys can check it out on your own. For some reason, this website that I'm on doesn't have direct links. Very odd. Yeah, there is a contingent of the Christian right that is very against this topic. There's a, for example, I had a fellow on my show. His name is Sean. He goes by wrong person. Anyway, I had somebody come on my show, and we talked about what is going on in the Christian right, and he receives a lot of backlash in his particular area. He's around a lot of these evangelical types. There is a narrative that has flown around in these Christian evangelical circles. Part of it is subversive. Part of it is like a genuine confusion. If the way you have to look at it is if the priestly caste of the church has been subverted, the people that are their followers will end up being subverted as well, kind of through the grapevine with these things. So it's definitely something to watch out for and keep your eye on. And a lot of these Christian circles, it has permeated itself into them pretty deeply. Okay, all right. You know what? Let me grab a bottle of water really quickly. I know I'm gonna go through this one because it's gonna be a long, lot of talking today with reading the speech. So give me 1 second. We'll be back in like 2 minutes, not even. All right, we are back. Thank you for the patience. I appreciate it. Okay. Okay, Austin, yeah, I'll actually save that in my browser. I'll take a look at that site. Have I studied the topic concerning the Anglo-Saxon Caucasian peoples being the true house of Israel? What are your thoughts? I have not studied that topic. I don't really do biblical stuff. I'm not a theologian. I'm not, I don't really follow any particular religion, so I really don't read into the biblical stuff. I think a lot of it is so historic. It's so far back, in the timeline, that much of what you read is going to be extremely interpretable. You can get like 10 guys in a room who have all read the Bible front to back a dozen times, and all of them can still debate what a passage means, because There's a lot of room for interpretation on these things. So, you'll get people that say that they're reading the Jewish version, and they say that Israel is God's chosen people, meaning the Jews. And then you get people that say, white people are God's chosen people. Or I don't think it matters. Personally, from my perspective, what matters is we know that the people that right now are calling themselves Jews are completely terrible and destructive to society, and they have an agenda to wipe out our people. So we have to defend ourselves on those grounds. The history of it and the kind of the lore or the mythology behind these things, I think a lot of that stuff can save itself for once we've turned around the situation that we're in. I think we get kind of complacent with our research when we kind of go down rabbit holes like that. So I try my best not to go down those. That's why you won't very rarely hear me talk about like these actual conspiracy type subjects like flat Earth or the moon landing or things like that. I don't look into them. I think it's a waste of time. I think, again, when we have power and we're living in a high trust, stable society, we can spend all the time in the world researching those things because we have the time to do it. So, Corith, good evening. It's nice to see you. It's going well. It's going well. I hope everybody had a really good Thanksgiving. Let's get into the show. We got about an hour and 45 minutes. We're gonna try to see how far we can get into this speech. I think it's almost impossible that we're going to get all the way through the speech. So we'll get as far in as we can. Let me just send this message really quickly. Okay. All right, so the speech that we're gonna go through today, of course, Joey, thank you for asking. Always love to give my views on things when people ask. The speech that we're gonna be going through today is from December 10th of 1940. Okay. It's a long speech, like absurdly long. Let me try to zoom in here too. Is this visible for you guys? Watching on your end, can you read the screen here, or should I make the text larger? Also, is the show running on Odyssey? Are we okay on Odyssey? It's good. Okay, perfect. Looks like we are on Odyssey. Yes. Maybe next time with a $3 super chat says, "I like the number three. This third option sounds intriguing. Do tell." Yeah. So I didn't know what to title the show. Seeing as we're basically just going to be reading a Hitler speech and kind of analyzing this and giving it a fair assessment. So with that being said, I didn't really know what to title the show, so I just went with third option because that's what National Socialism is. It is the third option, right? Like, we're not playing the left and right game. We're not getting into party politics. We're recognizing that these are cancerous and they're not going to ever benefit us moving forward. We're looking at now what is a third option, right? And there's many third options. There is, obviously there's communism. There's these other liberalistic kind of libertarian ideologies. But here on this show and from my perspective, it seems that National Socialism lays the best foundation or potential foundation for us moving forward. So that is the third option that we speak of. Okay, perfect. Thank you, JJ. All right, let's get into it. Okay. So it starts with again, this is December 10th, 1940. Nowadays, I do not speak very often. In the first place, I have little time for speaking, and in the second place, I believe that this is a time for action rather than speech. We are involved in a conflict in which more than the victory of only one country or the other is at stake. It is rather a war of two opposing worlds. I shall try to give you, as far as is possible, in the time at my disposal, an insight into the essential reasons underlying this conflict. I shall, however, confine myself to Western Europe only. The peoples who are primarily affected, 85 million Germans, 46 million British, 45 million Italians, and about 37 million Frenchmen, are the cores of the states who were or are still opposed in war. If I make a comparison between the living conditions of these peoples, the following facts become evident. 46 million British dominate and govern approximately 16 million square miles of the surface of the earth. 37 million Frenchmen dominate and govern a combined area of approximately 4 million square miles. 45 million Italians possess, taking into consideration only those territories in any way capable of being utilized, an area of scarcely 190,000 square miles. 85 million Germans possess as their living space scarcely 232,000 square miles. So, just to put that into perspective, for those who are not familiar with the geographical circumstance of Germany, Germany is about the size of Texas. Okay, and it has a population of 85 million, what actually probably more today. Compare that to the population size of Texas, it's like a complete fraction, right? So, this puts a complication on actually getting by, producing on the farmland, making sure that you can sustain all of those people. That's a very difficult circumstance. That is to say, 85 million Germans own only 232,000 square miles on which they must live their lives, and 46 million British possess 16 million square miles. So, way more land mass, right? Way more ability to actually create sustenance for your people. Now, my fellow countrymen, this world has not been so divided up by providence or Almighty God. This allocation has been made by man himself. The land was parceled out for the most part during the last 300 years. That is, during the period in which, unfortunately, the German people were helpless and torn by internal dissension, sorry. Split up into hundreds of small states in consequence of the Treaty of Munster, at the end of the 30 Years' War, our people frittered away their entire strength in internal strife. While during this period, the Germans, notwithstanding their particular ability among the people of Western Europe, dissipated their powers in vain internal struggles, the division of the world proceeded beyond their borders. It was not by treaties or by binding agreements, but exclusively by the force that Britain forged her gigantic empire. It's really important. So you look at the history, well, Jewish media today will call this colonialism, right? But if you look historically, this is how every empire has always grown. Look at the ancient Roman Empire. They were not, going into other territories and saying, "Hey, can I have some of that land?" They came in, they conquered that land by force. And this is the, eternal rule of might is right. Historically, that has always been the way that the world works. And this is true for humanity, and this is also true in the animal kingdom. Might is right. And this is a concept that is heavily preached in a National Socialist worldview, is the idea that if you want something, the stronger, the more fit is going to survive. The second people that failed to receive their fair share in this distribution, namely the Italians, experienced and suffered a similar fate. Torn by internal conflicts, devoid of unity, split up into numerous small states, this people also dissipated all their energy in internal strife. Nor was Italy able to obtain even the natural position in the Mediterranean, which was her due. Thus, in comparison with others, these two powerful peoples have received much less than their fair share. The objection might be raised, is this really of decisive importance? My fellow countrymen, Man does not exist on theories and phrases, on declarations, or on systems of political philosophy. He lives on what he can gain from the soil by his own labor in the form of food and raw materials. This is what he can eat. This is what he can use for manufacture and production. If a man's own living conditions offer him too little, his life will be wretched. We see that within the countries themselves, fruitful areas afford better living conditions than poor, barren lands. In the one case, there are flourishing villages. In the other, poverty-stricken communities. A man may live in a stony desert or in a fruitful land of plenty. This handicap can never be fully overcome by theories, nor even by the will to work. I think that makes sense. I don't think we have to describe that too much. We see that the primary cause for the existing tensions lies in the unfair
Brother
distribution
Nathaniel just posted
of the
that
riches
the Sanhedrin
of the
announced that all Jews
and it
are
is only
to return to
that
Israel
evolution
as
follows the same rule
soon
in a larger
as possible.
Framework as it does in
don't
the case
celebrate
of individuals.
Yet.
Just
to
as
me,
the tension existing
means
between
that the
rich
trip wires
and poor
are set.
Within a country
it's
must
paramount
be compensated for either
get the word
by
out
reason,
lest we lose
often,
sight of who's
if
responsible.
Reason fails, by force.
They have waged
so
war
in the life
on
of
us.
A nation, one cannot claim everything and leave nothing to others. So this is an important concept. You know, when you look at in the very beginning of the speech, he talked about two opposing worldviews. This is a worldview based on capital, right? Capitalism, which is based on how much capital is amassed, how much you are saving for yourself, which is an individualistic worldview. This is a worldview that looks after the one individual themselves. You see plenty of circumstances where families don't even want to give inheritance to their children because they're so focused on their own personal well-being, their own personal situation with material goods. And vice versa, you see children try to scam their parents or their brother or their sister out of inheritance money. How many cases of that are existent in modern society, right? They're everywhere. The robot voice is too loud? What do you mean? What robot voice? I don't know what you're referring to at all. Am I missing something? I don't know what you mean. Maybe next time. Maybe I'm. I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about. Anyway, let's continue. Scroll down a bit here. The great task which I set myself in internal affairs was to bring reason to bear on the problems, to eliminate dangerous tensions by invoking the common sense of all, to bridge the gulf between excessive riches and excessive poverty. I recognized, of course, that such processes cannot be consummated overnight. It is always preferable to bring together widely separated classes gradually and by the exercise of reason, rather than to resort to a solution based on force. Oh, text to speech. Oh, I'm sorry. I don't have entropy open. That's probably what it was. I can turn that down a little bit. My apologies. I did not see that we got an entropy. Let me pull that up. Sorry, I have a lot of tabs open right now, and I'm like one monitor is stuck to just this speech, so. Okay, here we go. Aquarius, brother, thank you very much. I'm sorry I didn't see that. With a $15 super chat, he says, Brother Nathaniel just posted that the Sanhedrin announced that all Jews are to return to Israel as soon as possible. Don't celebrate yet. To me, means that the tripwires are set. It's paramount to get the word out, lest we lose sight of who's responsible. They have waged war on us. Yeah, do you have like any articles or anything that talks about that? We could analyze. I don't want to analyze that today's show, but I can save something. We could talk about that on the next show. Yeah, sorry. I don't know why I didn't hear that or see it. Normally, I at least see it. Very odd. Sorry about that, folks. I will turn it down a little bit so it's not so loud. That should be better, I think. Yeah. There's an overlay playing. All right, I'm not understanding what's happening. I'm just getting more and more confused by the moment. All right, let's continue. I don't know what's going on. To go back to what we were describing here, so it's an opposition of world, two different worldviews. Okay, it's a capitalistic worldview, which is individualistic and based on material, and then it is a national socialist worldview, which two different terms which have very important meanings. So nationalism is this love for your country, your people. Okay, and this is very clear, not to be confused with patriotism. These are two very different concepts. Patriotism is solely a love for the country. Nationalism is a love for the people that make up the country, right? So if you have two different states, you have state A and state B, and state A is made up of people A, and state B is made up of people B, okay? And state A is nationalistic. They are nationalists. They will want only people of state A to be a part of that state out of a love and for their country, because they realize that the people are what create that, right? However, a patriotic country like state B will be okay with anybody coming in so long as they call themselves people B and they are sentimental towards the country of people B, right? So it's not about the people itself, but it's about just the country that has been created, right? And this is where you start to lose kind of track, because whatever people makes a country, it's their inherent culture and ethics that build up the political body of that country. So when they start to dilute and other people come in and they become a minority in that same country, now that country loses its character. So patriotism is kind of like this fleeting thing that can change from this to that in a couple years' time. So nationalism is very specific. Now, socialism, tacked onto the back of nationalism, socialism is for the common good, right? It's not focused on the individual. Rather, it's focused on the community. And this is what communism touts to be for, right? Commune, right? Community, right? Communism. Now, communism, the problem with communism is that who is gearing it? Who fomented this? Who created it? And what do they have in mind? You know, what are their ulterior motives behind that, right? And this is why it's very important not to conflate a national socialist form of socialism with a communistic form of socialism. They are two different forms of socialism with entirely different intentions. One is grounded up, one comes grassroots from the bottom to the top, and the other comes from it takes the top and then takes advantage of the bottom, right? It pulls everything back down to the lowest bottom possible, this lowest common denominator. So it's very important that you understand the two differences in those two forms of socialism, and that further you understand what he's describing here as an opposing worldview. It's a individualistic, liberal, quote-unquote, worldview versus a traditional and community-driven worldview, which is based on traditions, culture, and a love for those things and keeping those things solid and alive. Delta, welcome. It's nice to see you. Yeah, nation and country are not the same thing. However, nation and race are the same thing, which is also very important to understand. When you read a modern definition of nation, it will not have the word race in it. If you read an old dictionary, the word race is always present in the old dictionaries. Okay, so it used to be universally understood that nation and race are one and the same thing. Now, today, it's been subverted away from that original meaning, and people have lost the understanding of what exactly it is to be a part of a nation or to be nationalistic, if that makes sense. Okay, let's continue. Therefore, the right to live is at the same time a just claim to the soil, which alone is the source of life. When unreasonableness threatened to choke their development, nations fought for this sacred claim. No other course was open to them, and they realized that even bloodshed and sacrifice are better than the gradual extinction of a nation. Thus, At the beginning of our National Socialist Revolution in 1933, we set forth two demands. The first of these was the unification of our people. For without this unification, it would not have been possible to mobilize the forces required to formulate, and particularly, to secure Germany's essential claims. And now when he talks about a unification of the people, this isn't just a unification of everybody living together or a unification in the country in a physical sense. This is an ideological unification, right? This is something that we suffer from in the United States today. Here's a very good example. If you are in a household with, you know, 5-6 family members, even the household has become politically disunified to a point where, oh, if that person votes for Biden and that person votes for Trump, you guys can't even have a political conversation at Thanksgiving dinner without it ruining the day for everybody. People don't want someone to come over to their house because of the vaccine ordeal, which was a heavily politicized topic. It cannot be mistaken. That was a very politicized topic, and it was intentionally so. It was to create this disharmony, this disunion. And then further, class disunion. So the rich versus the poor, how they view each other, what their relationship is towards each other. They wanted to eliminate that dynamic of one group thinking they're better than another simply because they have more money, right? And that, again, goes down to a moral concept or a moral code, because there are a lot of people today in society that are complete millionaires. Are those people necessarily good people? Are they necessarily moral people? Are they beneficial people in many cases? Probably not. You look at these whores who are whoring themselves out on OnlyFans for millions of dollars. You look at the people owning those websites, these massive porn websites, all of these industries which are actually long-term destructive to society and do not constitute work but rather constitute usury. All of these different organizations are extremely harmful, and if you're somebody making money through that, that doesn't make you a better person than someone who has no money and is a veteran who fought on behalf of their country and has a deep love for it and has done everything they can to sacrifice for that. So wealth does not necessarily equate value, if that makes sense. It's a very hard statement for some people to wrap their minds around, but wealth and value are not one and the same. There are many valuable people in society who are not wealthy, and there are many wealthy people in society who are not valuable. Let's continue. For us, therefore, national unity was one of the essential conditions if we were to coordinate the powers inherent in the German nation properly, to make the German people conscious of their own greatness, realize their strength, recognize and present their vital claims, and seek national unity by an appeal to reason. All of which, if you take that little paragraph out, all of which would be very valuable for us today in America, in American society, right? Our people don't realize that they have strength over this corrupted fucking government. They just play this voting booth game, right? They're not conscious of their greatness and their past. It's actually being completely rooted out of us to a point where most people don't know anything about their history or their beginnings, not just in the country, but also on the individual level. They don't know their own family traditions or where they come from in that regard. Let's continue further. I know that I have not been successful everywhere. For nearly 15 years of my struggle, I was the target of two opposing sides. One side reproached me. You want to drag us who belong to the intelligentsia and to the upper classes down to the level of the others. That is impossible. We are educated people. In addition to that, we are wealthy and cultured. We cannot accept this. These people were incapable of listening to reason. Even today, there are some who cannot be converted. However, on the whole, the number of those who realize that the lack of unity in our national structure would sooner or later lead to the destruction of all classes, has become greater and greater. I was also met with opposition from the other side. They said, "We have our class consciousness." However, I was obliged to take the stand that in the existing situation, we could not afford to make experiments. it certainly would have been simple to eliminate the intelligentsia. Such a process could be carried out at once, but we would have to wait 50 or perhaps 100 years for the gap to refill, and such a period would mean the destruction of the nation. For how can our people, it's 320 per square mile, exist at all if they do not employ every ounce of brain power and physical strength to wrest from their soil what they need? This distinguishes us from the others. In Canada, for example, there are 2.6 persons per square mile. In other countries, perhaps 16, 18, 20, 26. Well, my fellow countrymen, no matter how stupidly one managed one's affairs in such a country, a decent living would still be possible. Right? So, all of these state forms, you know, the more rural you live, the kind of, look at Montana, for example, right, or Nebraska, some of these more rural states in the United States. It's very easy to uphold sustenance in a very rural area where there's not a lot of people around you, right? Now, on the other hand, if you live somewhere like New York City, where it's skyscrapers stacked on top of skyscrapers and thousands of people live in one corporate block very close to each other, it's very hard to provide for those people. You have to be bringing trucks in from the rural areas constantly. That creates traffic problems. So you have to have a very good infrastructure for things like that. You have to deal with the trash. Has anyone in here ever been to New York City on trash night? One of the chat of you guys have been to New York City on trash night, too, if you haven't. One if you have, two if you have not. Okay, so if you've been to New York City on trash night, you know what a terrible situation it is. They have trash stacked up 5 feet high on the streets. The whole town reeks like shit. That's what you have to do when everybody's living in skyscrapers. Like, I know some of those bigger buildings, they've now reworked the way they do things, and they have like a massive trash compactor like in the basement of the building or something. But for the most part, a lot of these places, I mean, there's just piles and piles and piles. I mean, trash bags literally stacked almost as tall as you when you're walking by. It's complete insanity. So living in a rural area, these are not things that you have to worry about with upkeep. But the second that you start conglomerating a lot of people into this one, you know, square block, very close-knit, close to each other like this, it's terrible to try to upkeep that. I'm sure New York actually probably does reek daily, like regularly, but it seems worse on trash night, at least from my experience. Here in Germany, however, there are 360 persons per square mile. The others cannot manage with 26 persons per square mile, but we must manage with 360. This is the task we face. This is why I expressed this view in 1933. We must solve these problems, and therefore we shall solve them. Of course, that was not easy. Everything could not be done immediately. Human beings are the product of their education, and unfortunately, this begins practically at birth. Infants are clothed in different ways. After this has been going on for centuries, someone suddenly comes along and says, "I want to unwrap the child and remove all its clothing so that I may discover its true nature," which is, of course, the same in every case. You have only created the difference by the external wrappings. Underneath these, they are all alike. So this is a very important thing, this line. Again, think about living in America, you know, coming up in this educational system, with this degenerate fucking corporate media that is brainwashing people into radical ideologies, making them lose track of correct principles and common sense, right? Losing their nature. Again, for instance, tribalism is very natural. If you look at basically every race on the planet, except for the collective white peoples, They're all very tribal. Asiatics are extremely tribal. If you go into Asia, they're very well aware of race. Whether they're saying that term or not, they're very well aware of it, and they're very tribal about it. Blacks, you see it in America, they're extremely tribal. They want to support only black businesses. They want to go to only black colleges. They want to be in their own little sector. You ever go to a high school? High school is a perfect testament to this. If you've ever been in a multicultural school, you'll walk down the hallway and there's groups. There's a group of black people. There's a group of Asians. There's a group of Indians, right? And there's a couple groups that maybe have a little bit of mixing. But for the most part, people stay with their own. It's a very tribal and natural instinct. Now, the only people that are not this tribal anymore are white peoples. And the reason for that is because there has been a ruthless campaign to psychologically break that natural instinct out of their minds. It's everywhere you look, right? White guilt, white guilt, white guilt. Hate yourself, white man. You experience white privilege. You should hate yourself for that. You're the product of colonizers. You should hate yourself for that. So they're doing everything they can to break this out of the psyche of our people. And the weaker elements in society are very susceptible to this, especially the more altruistic, emotional ones. They are extremely susceptible to a ruthless propaganda campaign like this, because social pressure is what drives a lot of these people. Ted Kaczynski, in his book Industrial Society and Its Future, he talks about exactly this. He talks about the process of over-socialization. He says when people become over-socialized in society, they actually become kind of fucking crazy, because it's too stressful to upkeep that, to try to keep yourself in the confines of all of what society deems is right and wrong, right? So 10 years ago, you could walk around and you could say, oh yeah, nigger this and faggot that and retard this, and no one cared. Everyone was like, oh yeah, that's a good one, yeah, right? Now, through the social pressures, through the conditioning that's been put upon our people, now if you say nigger, everybody in the room goes, oh, well, you can't say that. That's racist, right? Or if you say faggot, oh, are you homophobic? Right? But now, these same people who complain about this, it's very interesting. I had a conversation with a close friend of mine. And when he came across my shows and he saw some of my rhetoric on my shows, he said, oh, you know, you say nigger and stuff. Like, I don't get that. I don't like that. You know, I don't get that. He's like, you might be like strangling yourself from kind of like getting more mainstream. And I said, yeah, but that doesn't, we live in a free country here. Okay. And regardless of if you live in a free country or not, it's just a fucking word. And 10 years ago, I said that word, no one cared. Now they care. Why? He says, well, it's just not right to say. I said, okay. I said, so let's play your game, okay? And now let's pretend I was constantly saying cracker on my show. I was like, ah, you fucking cracker. Oh, this cracker here. Oh, look at that cracker. If I was constantly saying that, would you be reaming me out about that? And he said cracker. And looking at me and saying, oh, hey, you know, you really shouldn't use that word because, like, you might not be able to get on some larger podcasts. No, you would never even fathom saying that because there's no social pressure against that word. And the second you allow social pressure on any word, let alone words that are pertaining to race or identity, any word, when you put a social pressure on that and tell people they can't say it, you're now changing their psychological way that they view the world. Okay? It's now putting blacks on a pedestal and putting whites underneath them, okay, to a point where they'll attack their own people over a word. So this gets dangerous, because where does it stop? What are the bounds? What if tomorrow the system that is incorporating these social pressures says the word red is no longer acceptable? Red is associated with blood. Blood is bad. Blood is a bad thing. You know, bloodshed is horrible. Red is used in propaganda. You can no longer use the word red. It's a very mean and hateful word. Now, do we all stop using the word red? Do we start holding ourselves back from saying red? Oh, that those curtains are beige. Right? Are we going to play that game? Because this can get really fucking psychotic really fast. when we talk about this like Orwellian worldview, like these draconian laws, right? That's what that is. That's how this starts. So anybody who's scared to say faggot or nigger or kike, those people are allowing the start to this. This is how it starts psychologically. It starts first with your language, then it comes to your actions, and then at that point now you're getting thrown in gulags. So you have to understand that you allowing that breakdown is extremely dangerous. Okay? Let's get back on topic here. Continuing. However, it is not so easy to do this. Everyone resists being unwrapped. Everyone wishes to retain the habits he has acquired through his upbringing. But we will carry out our task just the same. We have enormous patience. I know that what has been done for 3, 4, or 5 centuries cannot be undone in 2, 3, or 5 years. The decisive point is to make a start. It has been a tremendous task. The establishment of a German community was the first item on the program in 1933. The second item was the elimination of foreign oppression, as expressed in the Treaty of Versailles, which also prevented our attaining national unity, forbade large sections of our people to unite, and robbed us of our possessions in the world, our German colonies. So that was a different circumstance. We don't have as much of a problem with this in the United States today. It's not like, Texas isn't allowed to be a part of us or something like that, which kind of like fragments us from some of our areas or positions. And you have to understand when you're in a place like Europe, geographically speaking, when there's all these other countries like physically surrounding you, a lot of these countries, they have 5, 6 different countries that physically border them. When you're in an area like that, landmass is extremely important. Because if you don't have the landmass for sustenance and a country decides one day, we don't like you anymore and we're just going to come in and invade, you need to defend yourself. You need to have the proper ability to do this. And landmass is a very meaningful piece to that. So, you know, again, in America, this isn't something we experience necessarily as much. Talking about sustenance and soil, we've got plenty of it. I mean, this is a problem that will this is something that will become problematic in America generations and generations from now, as people continue to breed and faster, and the population continues to increase rapidly, then these things will start to be a problem. But we have a long time before that's a serious problem in the United States of America. Let's continue. The second item on the program was, therefore, the struggle against Versailles. No one can say that I expressed this opinion for the first time today. I expressed it, my fellow countrymen, in the days following the Great War, when, still a soldier, I made my first appearance in the political arena. My first address was a speech against the collapse, against the Treaty of Versailles, and for the reestablishment of a powerful German Reich. That was the beginning of my work. What I have brought about since then does not represent a new aim, but the oldest aim. It is the primary reason for the conflict in which we find ourselves today. The rest of the world did not want our inner unity, because they knew that once it was achieved, the vital claim of our masses could be realized. They wanted to maintain the dictate of Versailles, in which they saw a second piece of Westphalia. However, there is still another reason. I have stated that the world was unequally divided. American observers and Englishmen have found a wonderful expression for this fact. They say there are two kinds of people, the haves and the have-nots. Everybody's heard that term, especially if you live in the States. We, the British, are the haves. It is a fact that we possess 16 million square miles, and we Americans are also haves, and so are we Frenchmen. The others, they are simply the have-nots. He who has nothing receives nothing. He shall remain what he is. He who has is not willing to share it. All my life I have been a have-not. At home I was a have-not. I regard myself as belonging to them and have always fought exclusively for them. This is really important. This is why he was able to gain such high sentiment when Hitler was coming to power, because he was appealing to the working class consistently, right? In his international clique speech, if you guys are familiar with that speech, he says, I come from your ranks. Literally, I was once one of you, and my inner character has not changed. And that's what people want today. People don't want some fucking politician who's a career politician who was born into a multi-million dollar family to tell them how things need to be ran and vie for their vote. They don't want that. They want somebody who they can relate with, who they have experience with. That's why people like Donald Trump, because they feel like he's one of those people. He's very good at throwing in some nice rhetoric that makes him sound like he's one of you. We're going to drain that swamp together, guys. We're going to get rid of that corrupt government together, guys. Right? It appeals to those people. It appeals to their sentiments. Gador, what do you mean? What I said before goes both sides? I don't know what you mean by that. Let's continue. I shall never recognize the claim of the others to that which they have taken by force. Under no circumstances can I acknowledge this claim with regard to that which has been taken from us. It is interesting to examine the life of these rich people. In this Anglo-French world, there exists, as it were, democracy, which means the rule of the people by the people. Now, the people must possess some means of giving expression to their thoughts or their wishes. Examining this problem more closely, we see that the people themselves have originally no convictions of their own. This is very important. This is very important. We see this today. People do not have convictions of their own. They have party convictions. Oh, I'm a Democrat, so yeah, Biden's good. I'm a Democrat, so I'm okay with homosexuality. I'm a Democrat, so I'm cool with the transgenderism. I'm a Democrat, so I wear a mask. Right. Why are these Democrat and Republican things? Why is it Democrat or Republican to wear or not wear a mask? Can't you have your own personal conviction? Why is it that if I'm a Democrat and I'm pro-homosexuality, why do I also have to be anti-gun? Wouldn't an individual maybe differ and have their own view on these things from time to time? Where are all the pro-gun homosexuals? Why is that? Why does it work that way? Because people don't have their own conviction. They're not coming from an individual worldview, rather a worldview that has been given, provided, produced and provided to the public. Yeah, Gador, I agree. I all words, it's universal. There should be no stifling of speech anywhere. And there also shouldn't be, you know, instant psychological reactions to these things. Let's continue. Their convictions are formed, of course, just as everywhere else. The decisive question is, who enlightens the people? Who educates them? In those countries... it is actually capital that rules. That is, nothing more than a clique of a few hundred men who possess untold wealth and, as a consequence of the peculiar structure of their national life, are more or less independent and free. They say, here we have liberty. By this they mean, above all, an uncontrolled economy. And by an uncontrolled economy, the freedom not only to acquire capital, but to make absolutely free use of it. That means freedom from national control or control by the people, both in the acquisition of capital and in its employment. This is really what they mean when they speak of liberty. These capitalists create their own press and then speak of the freedom of the press. Now, isn't that something? Isn't that something? It's exactly what we have here, right? Talk about free press. Well, how free is the press when you decide, I want to come out with an anti-Semitic newspaper and I want to write an editorial in the New York Times on that? Are they going to let you in? Like, are they going to let you run that article? So is the press free? Not at all. It's free for the people that own it. Right? Three Little Birds, I guess maybe I was using a very broad term to go back. When you say faggot and someone's reaction is, that was never a thing that existed in America 50 years ago. No one said a word and people around the room would go, even if you said something awful towards somebody. Right, people would, they'd be like, they might say, hey, don't say that, you know, like, whoa, that was rude, right? But that like, knee-jerk reaction, that's not normal. You can literally see, it's like a virtue signal. And that's dangerous. It's very dangerous. Let's go further. In reality, every one of the newspapers has a master. And in every case, this master is the capitalist, the owner. This master, not the editor, is the one who directs the policy of the paper. If the editor tries to write other than what suits the master, he is ousted the next day. Right? Just like we were saying. This press, which is the absolutely submissive and characterless slave of the owners, molds public opinion. Isn't that something? And all of these people that work for the press, they're a mindless slave. You have to push a narrative. And if you don't push that narrative, you don't get to be a part of the press. So therefore, all of the press is naturally corrupt by that standard. Now, when Trump talks about fake news, he's not going to lay it out like this. You understand? Because he can't lay it out like this, whether he believes this or not. Yeah, but Three Little Birds, I think I'll put one more point. We're getting too into the weeds on this. My point is, if you go into a room and you say nigger to somebody, okay, if I just say it casually in conversation, I go, that car there, that thing's nigger rigged, okay? Instantly, you're going to get young white people go, Now, if I, on the same note, was to say, oh, that guy's a complete cracker. Do you think those same young white people that reacted with that insane reaction are going to react that way about the word cracker? No. That's the entire point here, is that there should be no words that have this social atmosphere to them that are unacceptable. This shouldn't be a thing. I understand where you're coming from. Yeah, I don't want to get too deep into it. I don't want to go on like a completely take us off track. But yeah, makes sense. Okay. Public opinion, thus mobilized by them, in its turn, split up into political parties. So yet again, just like this COVID situation, right? This vaccine or no vaccine, Trump or Biden, very clear, very polarized pieces. One political party and one media apparatus pushed this view. The other political party and the other media apparatus pushed this view. So you choose one or the other. You want to be a middleman? Well, now you're a crazy conspiracy theorist. Shut up. Who was the middleman in that whole thing? It was complete polarization. Complete. No in between. The difference between these parties is as small as it formerly was in Germany. You know them, of course, the old parties. They were always one and the same. In Britain, matters are usually so arranged that families are divided up, one member being a conservative, another a liberal, and a third belonging to the Labour Party. Actually, all three sit together as members of the family, decide upon their common attitude, and determine it. A further point is that the elected people actually form a community which operates and controls all these organizations. For this reason, the opposition in England is really always the same. For on all essential matters in which the opposition has to make itself felt, the parties are always in agreement. Folks, what is the essential matter that both parties in America always agree on? What is it? What's the big one? What's the massive one that every political party agrees on in modern America? Jews, anti-Semitism, that's the one. Israel, we have to love Israel. They're our greatest ally. It doesn't matter if you're left or right, they're our greatest ally. Now somehow, we have fundamentally different views that are completely diametrically opposed on everything else, but that one thing, man, we love Jews. Oh, oh boy, do I love Jews, on both sides. So clearly, Jews must be in control of that apparatus, right? It's like if every party had the exact same thing to say, but then when it came to white people, they're like, oh no, we love them, we love them, we're all for them. That would be a white supremacist country, right? One that supports only white people on both sides, very clearly. Further, this is a very prescient speech. It literally pertains to what we're experiencing today. Where did I leave off here? They have one and the same conviction, and through the medium of the press, mold public opinion along corresponding lines. One might well believe that in these countries of liberty and riches, the people must possess an unlimited degree of prosperity. But no. On the contrary, it is precisely in these countries that the distress of the masses is greater than anywhere else. Such is the case in rich Britain. So, talking about unemployment, right? At this time when he's making this speech, the unemployment in America was 10 times the amount that it was in Germany. We were going through the Great Depression. We're going through all these economic problems, but we're supposed to be this free market, great capitalist society where everybody has a chance at the American dream. Or so we're told. Back to Britain. She controls 16 million square miles. In India, for example, 100 million colonial workers with a wretched standard of living must labor for her. One might think, perhaps, that at least in England itself, every person must have his share of these riches. But by no means. In that country, class distinction is the crassest imaginable. There is poverty, incredible poverty, on the one side, and equally incredible wealth on the other, right? So, again, look at America. There's not a lot of people in that, like, middle class right now that are just, like, doing well. Just doing well off. Most people are below the average income. Most. Right? The average income, which that in itself kind of is telling, right? That's like saying most people are below the average IQ. That wouldn't make any sense. Because if it's average, how could most people be under it? So if the average income is as high as it is, and the average person, or most people, are under that line of the average, that's telling us we have a really big imbalance and a very big problem, where the wealthy are so absurdly wealthy that they'll never have to even care about money, and the poor are so unbelievably poor that it's almost impossible to save money or come into money. They have not solved a single problem. The workmen of that country, which possess more than one-sixth of the globe and of the world's natural resources, dwell in misery. And the masses of the people are poorly clad. In a country which ought to have more than enough bread and every sort of fruit, we find millions of the lower classes who have not enough even to fill their stomachs and go about hungry. A nation which could provide work for the whole world must acknowledge the fact that it cannot even abolish unemployment at home. For decades, this rich Britain has had 2.5 million unemployed. Rich America, 10 to 13 millions, year after year. France, 600,000, 700,000, even 800,000. Well, my fellow countrymen, what then are we to say about ourselves? It is self-evident that where this democracy rules, the people as such are not taken into consideration at all. The only thing that matters is the existence of a few hundred gigantic capitalists who own all the factories and their stock, and through them control the people. The masses of the people do not interest them in the least. They are interested in them just as were our bourgeoisie parties in former times. Only when elections are being held, when they need votes. Otherwise, the life of the masses is a matter of complete indifference to them. Now, that's very important, because this is where we're at in America. We've talked about this before on the show. We used to be a capitalistic society, okay, like a true capital. Not like this fucking joke of capitalism that we're describing here now, but we used to actually be a capitalistic country where, again, that good old phrase, the customer is always right. That was the phrase in America. That was what everybody abided by. Now, that concept was very important because that concept was community-driven. It showed that the people who own the businesses, the corporations, they care about the little man. The little man literally is more valuable than the individual who runs the business for them. Now we live in a corporate oligarchy where the little man says, we're boycotting your store. Millions and millions of people are boycotting because you put a tranny on the Bud Light can, or because you put tranny stuff in the kids section at Target. And still, they continue to do it. Why? Because the customer isn't always right anymore. Because now the corporate interests are, they have so much money that they're not beholden to the consumer anymore. So the consumer can fuck off. They don't care. Yeah, protest all you want. They're laughing while people are shooting fucking tranny cans in their yard. They're laughing at you because it's not doing anything. It's not, you don't have the power to do anything. You understand that? To this must be added the difference in education. It is not ludicrous to hear a member of the British Labour Party, who, of course, as a member of the opposition, is officially paid by the government, say, when the war is over, we will do something in social respects. It is the members of Parliament who are the directors of the business concerns, just as used to be the case with us. But we have abolished all of that. A member of the Reichstag cannot belong to a board of directors except as a purely honorary member. Think about that. Think about that. We need that. He is prohibited from accepting any emolument, I think that's the word, financial or otherwise. This is not the case in other countries. Actually, in other countries, they get, you know, millions of dollars, right? In America. They reply, that is why our form of government is sacred to us. I can well believe it, for that form of government certainly pays very well. But whether it is sacred to the mass of the people as well is another matter. The people as a whole definitely suffer. I do not consider it possible in the long run for one man to work and toil for a whole year in return for ridiculous wages, while another jumps into an express train once a year and pockets enormous sums. Such conditions are a disgrace. On the other hand, we National Socialists equally oppose the theory that all men are equal. Today, when a man of genius makes some astounding invention and enormously benefits his country by his brains, we pay him his due, for he has really accomplished something and been of use to his country. However, we hope to make it impossible for idle drones to inhabit this country. I could continue to cite examples indefinitely. The fact remains that two worlds are face to face with one another. Our opponents are quite right when they say, nothing can reconcile us to the National Socialist world. How could a narrow-minded capitalist ever agree to my principles? It would be easier for the devil to go to church and cross himself with holy water than for these people to comprehend the ideas which are accepted facts to us today. But we have solved our problems. Very important. We're still fighting this ideological worldview here. It's still on these grounds today. Take a little break, a little water break, a little breather. Does anybody have any thoughts in the chat? I see a lot of people are having troubles with the Odyssey chat. I hope that can fix itself. I don't know what the nature of the problem is. Yeah, these speeches and the discussions around them are very important for us to have a good assessment of what's going on around us and the potential ways out of the situation that we're in. These are very necessary speeches. Yeah, excess DNA, they are. Just not in this world where common sense doesn't exist, right? That's kind of the problem we have here. Let's take a little 5-minute breather. Take a little break here. In the meantime, while we take a brief break, don't forget, folks, if you are not already, please be sure to share my work around and follow me on all my different platforms. Again, we're live on the Stu Peters Network. We are live on Rumble on my own channel under Logos Revealed I. We are live on Odyssey at Logos Revealed, and you guys can find me on Twitter at Logos Revealed. I also am always open to taking direct messages. You guys can find me on Telegram, it's Logos Revealed, or if you're like an email person, it's logosrevealed88@gmail.com if you would prefer to operate through email. No problem. And don't forget, folks, it's a shameless grift that always has to be done on these shows, but we do live in this very materialistic society where money is a necessity to get by in life and run shows like this, and everybody needs it. So I always do promote, if you guys do want to support the show, it's entirely optional. There's no obligation, but it's always greatly appreciated. You can super chat on Odyssey. You can do so on Rumble. You can do so on FTJ Media. I really recommend that you guys do it on FTJ Media. They have the lowest processor fees, so you're not getting price gouged by a middleman, nor am I. It's the best way to transfer money back and forth with each other, where we're not getting scammed like 20% or 15%, which is like the same thing as absurdly high interest rates, right? Speaking of which, I don't know when this was. I just see this now. I'm sorry. I have so many chats up. It's so hard to hold them all at the same time. Sack of Possums with a $25 super chat on FTJ. Thank you, sir. He says, haven't caught you live as much here recently. Hope you're doing well, brother. Still miss the whiteboard shows. As always, Folk Ofer L. Bad with other languages. I think that's German. Thank you, brother. I really appreciate the super chat. And I'm going to get the whiteboard cooking up again soon. I'm having a hard time getting a topic together that I am passionate about for it. And I am doing well, and the streams are always live here, so you're always always welcome to catch and tune in. Really appreciate you, brother. Thank you. take another sip of water, and then we'll kick it back up. Okay. Let's continue. To take another instance, where we are condemned, they claim to be fighting for the maintenance of the gold standard as the currency basis. That, I can well believe, for the gold is in their hands. We, too, once had gold, but it was stolen and extorted from us. When I came to power, it was not malice which made me abandon the gold standard. Germany simply had no gold left. Consequently, quitting the gold standard presented no difficulties, for it is always easy to part with what one does not have. We had no gold. We had no foreign exchange. They had all been stolen and extorted from us during the previous 15 years. But, my fellow countrymen, I did not regret it, for we have constructed our economic system on a wholly different basis. In our eyes, gold is not of value in itself. It is only an agent by which nations can be suppressed and dominated. Right? So this is they went away from the gold standard and they went to labor-backed currency, which is definitely a way better form. Yes, Delta, it is ftjmedia.com. Yep. I really recommend you guys make an account over there. Shoot me a follow. They're also, they are on Twitter now. Let me actually just really quick shill their Twitter account. Let me pull this up just very quickly. I do recommend that if you guys aren't already as well, if you guys could follow FTJ Media on Twitter, their at is FTJ Media Based. I will tag it, or I will link it in the chats for you guys. They're starting to try to post some clips onto Twitter. They want to grow over there as well. So sharing their stuff around will help them tremendously in that endeavor. I'm gonna post a link in the chat rooms here for you guys. Please make sure you are not only making an account over there, but also that you are following them on Twitter and sharing their stuff around so that they can get their message out there a little bit stronger. There is the link for everybody. Ooh. Let's continue. When I took over the government, I had only one hope on which to build, namely the efficiency and the ability of the German nation and the German working man. The intelligence of our inventors, engineers, technicians, chemists, and so forth, I built on the strength which animates our economic system. One simple question faced me. Are we to perish because we have no gold? Am I to believe in a phantom which spells our destruction? I championed the opposite opinion. Even though we have no gold, we have capacity for work. The German capacity for work is our gold and our capital. And with this gold, I can compete successfully with any power in the world. We want to live in houses which have to be built. Hence, the workers must build them, and the raw materials required must be procured by work. My whole economic system has been built up on the conception of work. We have solved our problems, while, amazingly enough, the capitalist countries and their currencies have suffered bankruptcy. Sterling can find no market today. Throw it at anyone, and he will step aside to avoid being hit. But our Reichsmark, which is backed by no gold, has remained stable. Why? It has no gold cover. It is backed by you and by your work. You have helped me to keep the mark stable. German currency, with no gold coverage, is worth more today than gold itself. It signifies unceasing production. This we owe to the German farmer, who has worked from daybreak till nightfall. This we owe to the German worker, who has given us his whole strength. The whole problem has been solved in one instant, as if by magic. My dear friends, if I had stated publicly 8 or 9 years ago, in 7 or 8 years, the problem of how to provide work for the unemployed will be solved. And the problem, then, will be where to find workers. I should have harmed my cause. Everyone would have declared, the man is mad. It is useless to talk to him, much less to support him. Nobody should vote for him. He is a fantastic creature. Today, however, all this has come true. Today, the only question for us is where to find workers. That, my fellow countrymen, is the blessing which work brings. Now, this is a really important thing, right? One of the biggest problems we have in our society today is finance. Again, living in this capitalistic country where the markets can just fluctuate and change at the behest of, you know, all these insider trading schemes. This is problematic because, again, only the common man hurts from this, right? How many different when that what bank was it? Wasn't Silicon Valley Bank? There was a bank that collapsed, and all these big wig Jews, they took all their money out of the bank and sent their money over to Israel, like literally right before the bank collapsed. This is insider trading. They're well aware of things that are going to happen before they actually happen themselves. I see we got red pilled over on FTJ with a super chat. Thank you so much, brother. $20 super chat. Thank you. I do appreciate. Again, I really appreciate you guys doing the super chats over on FTJ. It's an incredible platform for it. Saves us a lot of money from the middleman game. Most of these other platforms are taking upwards of 15% to 20% for super chats, which is just absurd. So I do appreciate that, folks. Give me 1 second, guys. Okay, sorry about that. I thought that was going to be more urgent than it was. It was not. Correct, yeah. Okay. Trying to see where a good stopping point is. I think we might be at a good breaking point. We're almost exactly halfway through the speech. Here. All right, yeah, I think we're gonna just take a break here. We'll just kind of chat for a little bit for the last 30 minutes or so here. I might even close up a little bit early. I do have a couple things I want to get done tonight. I have some things I got to get done on the computer. I have clips I have to make for my Twitter. They're sitting there. I just have to actually edit them. That's the annoying part. So you know what? Maybe we'll close up. Maybe we'll keep today like an hour and a half long show. I think that might work out. Sorry, I got a little thrown off with that phone call. Let's do that. Let's end a little bit early here. I do appreciate everybody for tuning in. This is going to be the last show of the week. I will not be live tomorrow or Sunday. However, on Sunday I'm going to be doing a Twitter space at 6 p.m. Eastern. Super recommend that you guys join that Twitter space. It's hosted by the Hitler Speeches guy. That's his name on Twitter. And he hosts Twitter spaces where we listen to Hitler speeches and he analyzes them. So he's invited me to be the co-host / guest for this next coming week. And I'm going to be analyzing another Hitler speech live in a Twitter space at 6 p.m. Eastern. It's a bit of a longer speech. It's like a half hour long. Speech, but it's going to be a good discussion. So, Highly encourage you guys to check that one out and participate in that. I think that's everything for the rest of this weekend. It's a pretty laid back weekend. Other than that, I'm just gonna kind of focus on some personal work and some stuff around the house here. So I will be back with you guys on Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern, kicking off with our typical three days a week shows. We will read the second half of this speech that we started today on Monday. I'll make sure that we finish it on Monday. And I might have some interviews coming up in the next like week or two. I'm trying to get some set up. I really want to do some interviews. It's been a little bit since I've had some guests on, so I'll try to get some people lined up in the future here. I'm trying to not do too many repeat guests. I want to kind of keep it as fresh and new as I can with each guest. So we'll do our best with that. We'll see how we can do. All right, that being said, thank you again, folks, for tuning into the show today. I'm gonna get some stuff uploaded onto my Twitter right now. And I will catch you guys on Monday at 4 p.m. Eastern. I'll also be on Sunday on that Twitter space. Don't forget to catch that as well. Keep asking for truth. Thank you. Sorry to be walking out on you here. Joel Davis, he's been on the show, and I'm actually doing a show with him later in near the end of December. So, all right. Thanks, folks. Have a wonderful night. Hope you have a good rest of your weekend after Thanksgiving. Hope you're all full and had some good time with family. Enjoy yourselves, and I'll see you guys Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern, okay? Thank you guys again. Talk soon.